You're listening to Knowledge at Wharton on Business Radio. Here again is Dan Loney.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 132 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. It is the 16th of September. Great having you joining us wherever you're listening to us around the United States or up into Canada. Coming up here in just a second, we'll have our number of the day. And then we are going to talk about the letter that 145 CEOs sent to the U.S. Senate regarding gun legislation and developing common sense legislation on things like background checks, red flag law, etc. We'll talk about that coming up in just a second. And then in our final 30, we'll talk about California Assembly Bill number 5 passing in both houses. Governor Gavin Newsom has it on his desk. It deals with the issues around gig economy workers and their status as part-time versus full-time. We'll spend some time at 11:30 Eastern time talking about that. All of that in the second hour of our show. The way for you to join in is either by phone at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866, or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132, BizRadio132, or my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, LONEY21. First, though, our number of the day, and our number of the day today is 100. This happens to do with an interesting aspect of college football and some of the big-name schools that are out there, like Alabama. Well, the head coach of the University of Alabama, Nick Saban, has had an issue in the last couple of years with the fact that students are leaving games early. Well, teams beating another team 62-3 in the third quarter might not be a surprise that students might leave the game early. The university actually does a loyalty points program for students when they go to the game. They earn 100 points for attending the game, and then they get an additional 250 points if they're in attendance in the fourth quarter. The idea is that the incentive of more points will prevent students from leaving the games, and that's already happened a couple of times this year, and it has happened in recent years. Saban has said, if I asked the whole student section, do you want to be number one? Nobody would hold their hand up and say, I want to be number four. They would all say, I want to be number one. But are they willing to do everything to be number one? That's another question, according to Saban. The system that Alabama has in place represents an extreme example of a broadly used idea. The University of Maryland employs a loyalty system for football and men's basketball. Their football team hasn't been real good the last couple of years, so it hasn't been as much of an impact. But the Terps basketball team has been, and that has become a question as well of students leaving games early there. This also goes to the profitability of college football programs and selling tickets and giving them to students at lower discounted prices or no cost at all instead of being able to sell the tickets. It also goes to keeping a closer eye on students as they are either at or not at games. Another little bit interesting aspect of college football and keeping an eye on the students as they go there. 100, our number of the day. CEOs of 145 companies have been calling on Congress to do something regarding gun violence and mass shootings here in the U.S. In a letter sent last Thursday to Senate members, they asked for new laws on background checks on all gun sales and red flag laws, allowing the courts to issue extreme risk protection orders. The letter said, quote, doing nothing about America's gun violence crisis is simply unacceptable, end quote. Chief executives of Uber, Gap, Dick's Sporting Goods, Levi Strauss, among others, signed this letter. Joining us to discuss about the potential impact of this move, Eric Ortz, director of the Initiative for Global Environmental Leadership here at the Wharton School. He's also professor of legal studies and business ethics, as well as author of the books The Moral Responsibility of Firms and Business Persons. And also joining us, Brian Berkey, assistant professor in Wharton's Department of Legal Studies and Business Ethics, as well as Department of Philosophy here at the University of Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks, Dan.
What was your reaction to the letter, and what impact do you think that this letter could potentially have?
Well, I think that the letter, as a number of other reports have indicated, shows that CEOs of companies are becoming more attentive to some of the political responsibilities that they are being forced to undertake. So you have it, this is not the only issue. Gun violence is obviously one huge issue right now that's facing the country. But a lot of companies are also being forced to take stronger positions on climate and other kinds of topics. So this is in a trend. This is part of a trend. For me, the big question is always when you have a big statement like this. And the Business Roundtable recently had another big statement saying, "Hey, we are the CEOs of the leading companies, and we are not only in favor of shareholders only. We have a broad conception of a stakeholder approach, et cetera." But the question for me is always, what is the real difference going to be? So what are the companies going to do? In a situation like this one, you have some companies who have laid off and are not saying anything, and right. They may have other things going on, or in particular, it's interesting that a few banks have not signed on, but that's because there's pushback. So there's a greater business risk for some companies to take a position on this than others. In general, the polls indicate, I think one poll just recently came out, that 89% of the American public are in favor of background checks, enhanced federal background checks for gun shows and even private sales, et cetera. And something like 86% are in favor of the extreme risk red flag laws, which would have prevented, for example, probably the Parkland shooting. And so it's not a huge risk if almost 90% of the public are with you.
Right.
What's more difficult is if there are questions that you have to take a position where you might offend or upset consumers or employees, or there is a bigger number. Now, you still have that risk here. So the NRA has come back after these companies and said, okay, well, we're going to boycott Levi's, for example. The CEO of Levi's was the ringleader of this and obviously was stepping forward on this, and makes an estimate, well, you know, if 90% of the people want to have common sense gun regulations, which then it's really not a big hit. In fact, you might improve your relationship with a lot of consumers by taking a position like this. And so the potential of a boycott by the NRA is not a big deal. The other thing that this gets to is a question of the intensity of what you would do in terms of, will these companies actually take a political position in terms of actually contributing, say, to every town, will they contribute money to try to shift this? So that's a threat. On the other side is, if you're a gun company, you're not only saying, hey, these rights should be protected, you're also giving money to the NRA, which then is giving money to politicians. Yeah. So are these companies, they don't say in the letter, this is such a big issue that we are now going to use our Citizens United First Amendment rights to actually support candidates or support the political process in favor of candidates who are going to be, who are going to take a position on this. So they're not saying that. And so that's the big question for me. What is this really going to mean at the end of the day? Is it just marketing and PR?
Right.
Or are they really going to follow this up with some meaningful action in the political arena to make a difference?
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think it's right that this is a notable thing that, you know, this many CEOs kind of came out, signed this letter. But as Eric pointed out, the polls show that the policies that the letter calls for are extremely popular. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the population that opposes these sorts of policies. So in that sense, there's not a ton of, you know, kind of PR related risk for these companies. And so one of the important questions going forward, as Eric pointed out, is, you know, what might these companies actually do going forward with respect to this sort of issue? And one of the kind of, I think, really important questions is about political contributions, political activity more broadly, right? So you have all of these companies that, you know, their CEOs have called for these changes in the laws. But when it comes time to, you know, decide whether to kind of give money to, you know, say, Republican candidates who are mostly opposed to these sorts of policies, or Democratic candidates that are mostly supportive of them, Are these companies going to be moved by this sort of policy position when, for example, many of the Democratic candidates are calling for example, increased taxes on right. very large corporations? There's a little bit of a worry that, there's this sort of, relatively low risk statement that these CEOs can come out in favor of, given the percentage of the population that supports them. But when it comes time to, put resources and kind of address the issues further, what are they going to do?
I would imagine, though, and even with the numbers that Eric mentioned about, 90% believing that it's important to address these issues right now, that for a CEO of a company, even getting negative reaction from a couple of consumers, 10 consumers, 20 consumers, even probably small as that number, is still something that they have to weigh in terms of the decision process when you come about a decision, an issue like this.
Yeah. So I imagine that, in the meetings at these companies where they're deciding whether, the CEO is going to sign the letter or not, these sorts of issues came up. How many people, who might buy our products or our services or whatever right. are... actually going to be less likely to do so because of this statement. And I think the fact that many, many companies decided to go ahead and have their CEO sign the letter is an indication that on net, they thought that at least the kind of overall effects were likely to be positive or at sure. least not negative for the company. And I think one reason why that's true now on the gun issue in a way that it probably wouldn't have been, 10 years ago,
right.
is that people who are generally disposed to favor greater gun control are paying more attention to the issue in large part because of all of the kind of tragic mass shootings and are more motivated to act on this issue in particular. In their kind of politics, in their kind of broader thinking about, which companies they're going to support yeah. And things yeah. like this. So the kind of asymmetry that was there for a long time on the issue where sort of gun rights advocates were kind of very motivated, very concerned about the issue. And, the majority of people on the other side had their views, but weren't moved primarily sure. Largely by this issue, I think has changed somewhat.
Eric?
Yeah, but I think you're right, Dan, that there is a risk of some cost. And so that's yeah. a question that really comes to the fore for this. So one example that supports your point is Dick's Sporting Goods.
Sure.
They yep. had decided after a recent mass shooting, they were going to say, okay, we're not selling AR-15s anymore yep. and that sort of thing. They were subject to a boycott that I believe actually hit their bottom line pretty hard because if you think of who they, a lot of places where those, where they have stores, there are going to be people who are upset. And Walmart is similarly feeling some pressure. But just to add another dimension to this, in the Walmart decision, Walmart has decided also not to sell the assault rifles, but they also have now said they're not going to sell ammunition that can yeah. be used for that.
Yep.
And there, another feature of this is they have said, we don't want people coming in open carry to our stores.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Now that has actually a big blowback. Yeah, that has
after what happened in
effect,
El Paso. Yeah,
but a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm boycotting Walmart because I need to protect myself. I have a Second Amendment right to carry around my firearm, and so I'm not going to go to Walmart anymore. So
yeah,
you can add up the number of those people, and you're right, it's going to be some financial aspect. And I think in those cases, Walmart, it's not only the consumers in that case; it's about do you have a responsibility to protect your employees? A lot of these mass shootings are occurring yep. at stores like Walmart's, and so you see the CVS, Target. Almost. Yep. Maybe you should change your name if your name is Target. But but they have that idea, right? Where you? Sorry, that's part. But the truth is that for people trying to catch attention or try to have a big problem, they come to movie theaters. They come to the CVS,
the synagogue
or
in Pittsburgh.
Right? Yeah,
when they were in services, and there were so many people there as well.
Yeah, and so if you're a business, it's not really. You do have to make an ethical choice here. I think that involves the trade-offs that you can't just be a CEO trying to maximize your returns and look only at what the consumers want. You have to look at protecting, you have a responsibility to protect your people who work there. And in this case, I think also it becomes a broader issue when you have, I mean, it's literally, we have 100 people killed every day in the United States. It's pretty clear from the statistics that it's an epidemic level problem that no other country has a problem with, right? And it's because of our laws. Then I think at some point on these very high salient issues that are a threat to lots of the population, it becomes a responsibility for business to be part of the society and take a stand.
But it's also in many cases with these CEOs and the executives that sign this, it does end up being partly a personal decision that they have to make. For each of these gentlemen, Eric mentioned Dick's Sporting Goods and the move to take various elements of guns and ammunition out, and same for Walmart. A company like Levi Strauss really doesn't have that kind of, you know, stock in the game, but they are making that personal decision to sign that letter.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think as Eric pointed out, there are important ethical considerations at stake here, and I think it's right that business leaders have a responsibility to take a public position on issues of kind of great importance like guns in our society. And I think there are particular kinds of responsibilities that at least many of these companies have to, you know, take steps to protect their employees and, you know, people who are coming into their stores. I mean, one thing to say about kind of the issue of open carry is, in addition to the ethical considerations, I think it's not obvious that the kind of negative reaction, you know, people who aren't going to go to Walmart because they can't carry their guns, is really going to kind of outweigh the, you know, even the kind of business related benefits of this. I mean, I know I wouldn't go to a store where people were regularly open carrying, you know, assault rifles. And I'm sure I'm not alone on that. So, you know, a company taking steps to kind of prevent that sort of thing from happening is going to draw a lot of people who might not otherwise be willing to go in also.
Eric?
Yeah, and I think we do need to drill down and see how complicated this issue is. So it's not just, as you indicate, a lot of times CEOs will make a personal decision and sometimes will come down to that. But I think that CEOs also have to be aware that they are in a role. So it's not okay just to say, this is my personal opinion on something, and therefore let's, whatever the personal opinions or political opinions of a CEO are, I now have power and I get to do that. That's the wrong approach. You have to be within the role. I'll give you one example that I had personal experience with of a company that was a utility, and they were giving a huge amount of money away in their charitable contribution to Ducks Unlimited. And it was a question was, wait a second, there's a climate issue. What are you guys doing on all these environmental issues? And it was a lot of money to Ducks Unlimited. Well, why was that? The CEO like to hunt ducks, right? And so that's an example of the wrong approach, right? To take a position on this only because of this. And so we have to be careful, and you have to look at the other side. So how would you know, someone who might be in favor of more gun regulation might say, hey, hooray, when it's on their side. But what if a business is taking a position on the other side of their political preferences? And if you're a CEO, you have to be willing, you have to be able to be adept and to separate your own personal ethical and political views from your responsibility as a CEO.
And that also goes to the fact that that CEO probably is going to have some sort of dealing with the board of directors before signing that letter, and also potentially, maybe after signing the letter, with the employees of said company as well.
And it's really a good idea for that process to take place. And I'm pretty sure, without knowing the details, that happened in this case, that these CEOs were probably consulting their board.
Yeah.
And it makes sense also for the reason I just indicated, that you're checking yourself, right? You might have a personal feeling that this is really an important position to take for the company, but you want to check that with other constituents of the company. The board, generally, if you check that with a board, then they're going to give you feedback. Hopefully it's an objective board and not just a yes person board. And they'll give you their feedback about the pluses and minuses, not only on the business side of the issue, but also the ethical and political side. And then other groups are important to take to consider is check with what would most consumers think. Polls can be important, as they are in this case. And then also the employees. What do the employees think? That's another way to check whether your ethical actions are really in line with the various interests of the firm that you are responsible for representing.
Brian?
Yeah, so I think all of that's right. And, you know, it's right not just for people in, roles like CEOs. I mean, what Eric is describing is the importance of kind of taking into account a broad range of viewpoints, listening to contrary views and arguments, and kind of thinking carefully about all of the kind of ethical considerations that are relevant in kind of difficult cases. One thing that is, I think, important to keep in mind here is that, I mean, for some of the reasons that we've already described, there's a way in which this case is relatively easy in comparison with some other kinds of issues that CEOs might face in kind of similar circumstances, primarily because public opinion is so kind of lopsidedly on one side,
yeah.
At least with respect to the two main policy proposals that were kind of advocated in the letter. In many cases, CEOs might be faced with having to decide whether to take a stand on an issue in which public opinion is much more divided, and kind of consulting a wide range of people is going to, you know, kind of leave them with kind of conflicting advice, deeply divided views and so on,
yeah.
Where the business considerations might also be kind of murkier, right? Less clear that kind of advantageous to the company to take one position rather than another. And a decision still has to be made. And I think there are going to be cases in which the issue is important enough that people in positions of power and authority in the business world have a responsibility to take even much more controversial public positions in order to contribute to addressing really important moral issues. And climate change is, kind of one of the good examples of this.
The issue for Dick's Sporting Goods, as you mentioned, they've decided to pull some of these materials out of, I guess it was about 125 stores. They still have a variety of stores that do still have some of these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the decision, I guess, now over time. They started out with an initial test of 10 stores. Then they went to 125, and they still have these other stores. So it's almost like they are kind of feeling the water a little bit to see what the reaction is. Not exactly going whole hog on this, but kind of dipping their toe in the water to see whether they would be impacted or not. And they're looking at this personal topic for many people as a business decision.
Yeah, and those of us who are ethicists would start to question the ethics of that, right?
Is right.
That when you're making you probably should look at the issue as a clear question and then take a position on it rather than doing ethics by taking a poll of what people think. I would say most business ethicists would say that's not the way to get to the right answer of what an ethical thing to do is. But I wanted to just throw out one example. I think some listeners might be tempted to think this is an easy question on the gun issue, but if you flip it, consider the Hobby Lobby case. Like, that's a yeah. case where the company is doing what it thinks is the right thing to do, and that is restricting the availability of certain kinds of contraceptives to its employees. Well, then you can see that this goes both ways, right? When a company is taking a position on that, how does it make the right decision, even if the CEO and the founders think X about the morals of the company? So you can see that these, I think the issues are difficult. And one point I think is a final takeaway from these questions is that it is not a right answer to adopt what I call the myth of business neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that tends to be this idea that businesses should just be neutral, let the politics happen out here, and we can afford to just be neutral. And the reason that doesn't work is that for lots of businesses, they're not going to be neutral. So in this case, the companies that make guns and their whole business model depends on making guns are not going to be neutral. And in fact, they are, by most accounts, a big part of the problem of why you can't get anything done, even though you have almost 90% of the people thinking we should have this law. Why don't we? Well, it's because they're there's a business interest that can be very focused on this issue. And so what and I think the same is true in the climate issue area that Brian mentioned. So what other businesses have to realize is that this is the reality, and you can't just say, well, let's see how the political process works out. If it's an extremely important issue like gun violence, you really can't afford to just be neutral and say, you know, our hands are clean. You have to, you're a citizen really of the society as well. And on some of these issues, you have to take a stand.
But I would imagine, Brian, that part of the issue for some of these companies, playing off of what Eric said, is the fact that in our society, in our politics today, we have very little neutral to begin with. And when you have, you know, far left, far right, take your pick, whichever side you're following. And those are kind of the dominant pieces that are on, that we read about and hear about on a daily basis. The fact that we've lost kind of neutral does play an important role here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, certainly increased polarization can make it harder for businesses to kind of adopt this kind of public kind of attempt at, the appearance of neutrality. But I think more generally, Eric is right that there are ethical obligations that companies have in virtue of their capacity to kind of influence political outcomes, their kind of involvement in, society more generally, to contribute to addressing problems where they kind of have the opportunity to do so, and to kind of step back and say, well, it's not our place or it's not our job to, kind of take a position on this issue or that issue. We're just going to kind of leave it to the kind of political process, is really just to kind of abandon a responsibility to the rest of society to kind of use the resources at one's disposal to contribute to making the world more just.
Great having you both with us. Have to end it there. Thank you very much for coming in, as always. Great seeing you both.
Thanks, Dan.
Look forward to talking to you again. Eric Ortz, Brian Berkey from here at the Wharton School. We will take a break. Our final 30 coming up in just a minute. Sirius XM 132 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.